This is Radio 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you think you're too clever to be caught by a con man? In Pros and Cons, you have the chance with tonight's celebrity panel to spot the confidence tricksters and their devious ways of working. And here's the man with the clues, misleading or otherwise, your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
Well, hello to you once again. Con tricks may be devious, but the rules of Pros and Cons are very simple. Our resident referee company will display their versatility by acting out situations until they are stopped by this bell. By that time, they will have planted all the clues and possibly a red herring or two, and then I'm going to ask our panel to tell me if they've managed to spot the con trick or identify the character or characters responsible. And, of course, you at home are invited to join tonight's panel, who are Roy Huth, David Jason, and Claire Rayner. David Jason, a man of open visage.
Oh,
an honest-looking fellow.
The nicest things.
Has anybody ever tried to con you?
Funny enough, yes. I was working in Newcastle doing pantomime. And between the shows, a guy came round and he said, could I speak to Mr. Jason? So I went out to the stage door and I met this guy. I won't use his real name, obviously. And he said, hello, my name is Harry Dickens. You remember me, Mr. Jason? I said, no, Harry. I said, I work in a hotel that you've just moved from. So I said, oh, really? He said, I wonder if I could see you alone. I said, well, this is as alone as we're going to get, sailor, right here. He showed me a letter. And the short answer of it was, he said, unless you pay the £25 fine that you owe us, you will be in prison over Christmas. He said, you couldn't see your way to lend me the 25 because I want to, you know, I don't want to go in prison over Christmas with a wife and a family. I just wondered if you could sort of help me out a bit here. And I went, look, I've just got to go on. I said, I'll tell you what, Harry, you did say your name was Harry. Look, could you come round on Monday, and I'll see, this was on the Thursday. Anyway, he arrived on the Monday, and I'd worked out what to say. So he arrived, and he said, I wonder, Mr. Chase, you know, have you got the 20, could you, I'll pay you back in 2 weeks, on my mother's life, 2 weeks. So I said, I'll tell you what, the thing is, I've had a word with my manager, and he won't give me any money. So I said, what do you mean he won't give you any? He said, well, I don't have any money, you see, because they pay all my debts, because I'm a bit of a... You've heard of Gamblers Anonymous, haven't you? I said, that's my problem. So they don't let me have any money. I only have a fiver a day. So I just don't have any money, Harry. So he said, oh, well, sorry that I asked you then, Mr. Jason. He left and he doesn't know whether he's been conned. If you're listening, Harry, I conned you.
Claire Rayner, I can't believe that writing a column as you do for The Sun that you are easily conned. Or is that just simply a facade? You know, you seem such an organised lady. Are you easily conned?
Not easily, but I was once beautifully, elegantly conned, and it happened in public. I had a letter from a lady. I remember the name so vividly because it was such an unusual one. She signed the letter Thelma Dane, and her problem was a very sad one. She had been a widow. She wrote because, in fact, she was terribly worried about her son. And he was being absolutely horrible. So, she knew he'd been upset when his dad had died, but, you know, they'd managed, it would be all right. And she'd remarried, and it wasn't as though, like she brought a totally strange man into the family. I mean, in fact, she'd married, it was her brother-in-law, they'd always been on very close terms, and it was all very sad, and she didn't know what to do about her son. So I took it very seriously. I remember I referred her to the Marriage Guidance Council. Now, what I hadn't noticed was that Thelma is an anagram. Hamlet. This was the Gertrude story. Do you know who sent me the letter? Mr. Michael Parkinson. He was setting me up. He was setting me up for a television program. I didn't know. I was on holiday in Spain. And I got this message, come and be on the Parkin show. And I thought, well, I'm so tickled that the BBC were going to spend more to get me there and bring me back than they were going to pay me. I couldn't resist it. So off I go and I march onto this. And then he tells him what he's done. He was not best pleased.
Roy? It's supposedly a true story about the vicar. You see, the vicar who tried to con his congregation. You see, he'd actually had his bicycle pinched, this vicar. So he says to the verger, he said, now look, he said, when I do my sermon tonight, he said, in the middle of my sermon, he said, I'm going to go right through the Ten Commandments. He said, and when I get to thou shalt not steal, he said, I'm going to stop. And I want you to look all around the congregation and see who looks guilty. Right? Okay, so that night did his sermon. He went straight through the Ten Commandments without stopping. Afterwards, the verger said to him, he said, I thought you were going to stop when you got to thou shalt not steal. He said, I was. He said, well, when I got to Thou Shalt Not Commit Adultery, I remember where I'd left my bike.
Right, you've heard some con stories from our panel, OK? Now our repertory company take us into the first situation. We're set in auction rooms during a house auction. The auctioneer is about to describe one of the properties that's up for sale.
We now come to lot 14 in your catalogue, which, as you can see from the picture, is a most beautiful Tudor-style house in Woking's exclusive stockbroker belt. Though the outside has an old-world charm, the interior is very modern. It has gas-fired central heating, completely fitted kitchen, built-in wardrobes in all six bedrooms, two fully tiled bathrooms, one including a WC, and there are, in addition, two separate WCs. Those of you that haven't actually visited the property can see from the catalogue that the rooms are indeed spacious. The kitchen, which measures 20 by 10, can also be used for dining, though there is, of course, a separate morning room leading off it. The reserve price on this very desirable property is £165,000, but I'm expecting your bids to rise to well over £200,000 this afternoon. Now, ladies and gentlemen, who will begin the bidding for me?
Just a minute before you start. I can't see anything in the catalogue about the state of the cellar.
I'm sorry, sir, you're out of order. We have started the bidding. If you had any inquiries, you should have made them before today. Your bids, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Then I take it the present owner denies there's rising damp in the cellar.
To my knowledge, sir, there is no rising damp in the cellar or anywhere else in the house.
Oh, yes.
Yes, if there had been, then I'm sure the owner would have mentioned it. As I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very desirable property in a good location where the value is bound to rise.
Well, if it doesn't, the damp will.
Who bid £175,000?
Well, not me, that's for sure. I've been there and seen that cellar. Costs a small fortune to cure rising damp these days.
Look, sir, let me say once and for all, this house does not have rising damp.
So you keep saying, but can you prove it?
Yes, if I must. We have the present owner, Mrs. Metcalf, here with us. Mrs. Metcalf, would you like to assure this gentleman, and anyone else here for that matter, that your house is quite sound?
By all means. When we first thought of selling the place 6 months ago, my late husband had it thoroughly surveyed and absolutely no damp was found. The house and grounds were passed as being in excellent condition.
Thank you, Mrs. Metcalf. Now, sir, if you're satisfied, perhaps I may proceed.
Well, I'm satisfied it was all right 6 months ago, but that was before the very wet winter we just had. What about the damp patches I felt on the cellar walls last week? If it wasn't rising damp, it was probably water seeping through from a plumbing fault. And what about the damp course? Some of these old houses...
Look, sir, Mrs. Metcalf has assured me the property is quite sound, and I fully accept what she says. Now, I do have a lot of other properties to get through this afternoon, so can we please start the bidding?
That's all you're going to hear, Pam.
Love it. Very good.
Oh, don't you?
Love it. Got the laughs?
Yes.
Now, who was in the con there? Was there just one person? Were there two people in cahoots? If so, which two? Roy Hudd, let's start with you this time.
Well, it's got to be them two, and the two are flogging the house, because, I mean, you know, he's so nice, isn't he, that heckler? He's such a lovely geezer, isn't
he's
he?
He's sort of guy.
Yeah, I liked him, you know.
All that, I like that voice, you know, it's a good one.
Carly,
so you, no.
You think that Mrs. Metcalf and the auctioneer are pulling a...
Yeah, but then you see, I mean, he's so crafty, that Red Ashman who writes this show, it could easily be
the lovely fella who spoke like that.
Well, actually, that's
go
what
on,
I
Claire.
Think. I think the con is the auctioneer and the lovely fella at the back. The fella at the back is going to have the price pulled down, have the house knocked off to someone else. There's someone else in the con we didn't even hear. Someone else is going to buy it at its reserve, or even under. And then the auctioneer, who's the fella who's always selling houses, is going to get the house back and sell it again, and they're all going to split the profit.
A ring. A ring indeed.
Yes, I agree with this one here. Yes, I think that what's going to happen is that they're trying to get the house to go at reserve price, which is the auctioneer, though that would be illegal, but, you know, and the man at the back who keeps on about his rising damp, he is going to buy the house at reserve price, which is very good value, and then they're going to get together, and that man is going to sell it at some other time, either privately or whatever, and that's where they're going to make a few quid that
and
way.
And poor Mrs. Metcalf is going to be clobbered.
Yes. Actually, he'll offer. Now, then, wait a minute. Supposing Mr. Rising Damp here, I'll call him that because I can't remember his name, Mr. Rising Damp then says, the auctioneer can't get rid of the property, Mr. Rising Damp goes around and says, well, look, I'll do you a favour, love, I'll take it off your hands, but it'll cost me 5,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 to have the rising damp done.
£1,000, I'll make you an offer of much below the reserve price.
Ah, well, no, that's...
Does that make any sense, Mr. Hudd or Mr.
Well,
Rayner?
I think somebody else... I think somebody else could easily top that anyway. You know, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to offer a bit more. I will.
Yeah, I will. I'd offer a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to offer a bit more?
Well, yeah, wait until the show's over. We're going to see this fella.
It's kind of very interesting here and exciting.
I thought from his voice that in actual fact he'd got rising down.
You certainly sounded a shade logged, waterlogged. Yes.
You're getting very close to this. You're getting very close to it.
I'm quite sure that it's the auctioneer and the fella in... There's a ring, like a dealer's ring, yes, that you get at other auctions.
Yes.
It's just a variation on an old theme.
Oh, yeah, they work very well together. Those two work very well together.
Who believes that the auctioneer is involved, Roy?
I think he is, yeah.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think poor Mrs. Metcalf is going to get a good idea.
She's going to come
up. Well, you're right, she is. But I'm only going to give you half a mark because the auctioneer is not involved. Our friend...
The high voice up there.
He was hired... by another buyer.
Oh, that's how he got the voice, was it? He was hired, I said.
Yes.
Oh, this rising damp's touching you now. Yes.
Now, what actually happened is that the guy with the high voice was hired by another bidder at the auction. He was simply sowing a little doubt in people's minds just to keep the price down. And the auctioneer was being quite straightforward. In fact, he didn't deal with the situation he should have done because he shouldn't have allowed any interruptions at all. But
when a bloke speaks like that, you can't...
I think we ought to get three quarters. We got so close.
So do I. Here, Mr. Rayner, yes.
Three quarters.
And I mean, an extra quarter for the impressions.
Yes. And we're a quarter each. We're entitled to that.
Three quarters, shall I give them?
Yes.
What a soft lot they are.
Thank you very much, everybody. Yes, we enjoyed that. Yes, didn't we?
Second situation coming up now. It takes us into the menswear department of a suburban London store around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the sales lady is attending to a customer.
Yes, sir, I'd say that blazer's the perfect fit. Could it be made for you?
Yes, it is rather good, isn't it? Well, I used to take two sizes larger, but I've just been on a diet, lost 20 pounds. This jacket's a way of rewarding myself. Yes, I'll take it.
Thank you, sir. You pay the cashier in the far corner.
Bye. Thanks for your help.
Now, which of you two gentlemen is next?
I am. Already I have been waiting for 5 minutes.
Sorry about that, sir. The other girl's on her tea break. Now, what can I do for you?
Just a moment, please. I was here before this man. I was just filling in time by looking at the trousers on the rack over there.
That's your fault. You should have waited here like I did. Fräulein, I wanted to serve quickly. I have to meet my wife downstairs in the jury department in 5 minutes.
Let her wait. I have an appointment, too, and mind his business, so I cannot afford to hang around, mademoiselle. I've already picked out the jacket I want.
Oh, in that case, sir, if the other gentleman doesn't mind, I'll serve you first. Which jacket is it?
I want one like this grey check one, but I do not know my English size. Could you please measure me?
Yes, sir. I'll just get my tape measure from the counter. Won't be a moment. Where have I put the thing?
Pardon me, miss. I'm looking for a pinstripe suit and a heavy worsted. Do you have my size? I'm a 50 chest.
I think we have, sir. But I'm serving someone else at the moment, and there's another gentleman waiting after him. I'll get you as quickly as I can.
Okay, I'll just browse around till you're ready.
Just my luck. Quiet all day. Then the moment I'm on my own, we get a rush on. Right, now to measure monsieur. Here we are, sir. Now, let's see what size you are. I'd say a 40. Ah, 39. Well, a 38 would probably be a bit tight, so I'd definitely suggest this 40. Here, try this one on and see how you like it.
Merci. Yes, it feels quite comfortable.
And it's very smart, too. It's the latest fashion. They've just come in.
It may be just a little bit too big. You mind if I try on one size smaller just so I can compare them?
No, by all means, sir. After all, you'd have a long way to come back if you're not satisfied.
I'm still here waiting.
Just a moment, sir. I've only got one pair of hands.
Perhaps you'd better see to him. I'll take whichever of these two I like best.
Thank you, sir. Call me if you need me. Now, sir, I'm here to help you.
It's about time. I have less than 3 minutes. I want to buy a raincoat for my son. I don't know his exact size, but he's just a little bit fatter than me, and he's 2 meters tall.
2 meters? What's that in feet and inches?
Ah, you British. You have joined Europe, but you still cling to your old ideas. Feet and inches, pounds and stones, driving on the left. You should know that 2 meters is what you still call about 6 feet 6.
Yes, sir. Then what you'd want is a size 42 long. I'm not sure we have one in stock.
After keeping me waiting all this time, you don't think you have what I want.
I'll look through the rail, sir, but I don't remember seeing one. 30,
Pardon,
please. I'm not sure which to take now. Do you think this 38 really looks tight on me? I mean, compared with the 40. I'll show you the 40 again.
I'm sure the 40 would be best for you, sir.
It's me you are supposed to be serving now. Thanks to him, I'm late already.
Well, I just want her to look for a moment. I'll turn around it. Is it too loose at the back?
No, it's perfect, sir. Just right for you.
Then I take it. You are most kind. Au revoir. I'll put the other one back on my way up.
Ah! No, sir. Definitely no 40 too long, but I can order one for you. It will take about a week.
The way you work, it would take more like a year. Anyway, I'm back to München on Sunday, so forget it. I wish you a good day.
Good day to you, mate. Bloody foreigners. They all want your attention at once. Now, where's that American? Oh, he's gone too. Another impatient one who couldn't wait.
The voices of the
Yes. Yes, sir. I think this is a sort of walnut three-shell trick.
Yeah.
I think there are these three fellas leaping around. Who's got the jacket? Who hasn't got the jacket? Who's got the garment? I think Monsieur Le Frenchman. I think he walked out with an extra jacket. There was so much going on with the others that he just pinched one as well as the one he was supposed to pay for.
Do you think all three were in cahoots?
I think
possibly, yeah, but I mean, if they weren't, one of them was certainly taking advantage of a very unusual suburb with all these foreign visitors. But he was, and then maybe they were in cahoots. Certainly two of them were. I think the Frenchman and the German might have been.
Yeah, what I think he'd put that big jacket on over the little one and gone out with that.
Mm.
Who put the big jacket on the little one?
The Frenchman.
The
Frenchman. Yes, the two fellas, the Frenchman and the German, were definitely in some sort of cahoots. The thing was to confuse the sales girl. To such a point where she was not quite sure what was going on, uh-huh. So that during the ensuing sort of con, he walked out with the small jacket underneath the big one, because the other fella, who was the German guy, said, oh, look, I can't be bothered anyway, I'm going to leave, because I'm annoyed with you. So I said that those two were in the con. The American...
I don't know, I like the Americans awful lot, and I don't think the Americans are not the
But do you think, I mean, Roy, do you think that Americans they would do this just to steal one jacket?
No, probably stealing a lot more if we
didn't
know.
He's probably got underneath that 40. He's probably got a 28, a 30, a 32.
And 347 pairs of trousers.
Yeah. And a kilt over the top of them.
Yes. May I say you're getting warm?
Yes.
Oh, what, the kilt? Are you still with you if you wore that lot?
Do you think that while the common market was cleaning up, the Frenchman and the German, that the American made the most of his opportunities and just cleared the rails and walked out. I mean, anything could be going on
now,
at the same time.
Now
we're getting...
So it was the three of them.
And what was the size of that American, do you remember?
He had a 50-inch chest. He had all the clothes on. Of course he did.
Yeah, and he had a very thin voice. Oh, no, yeah. I forgot to say. Definitely, a 50-inch chest, you get a lot on.
Yes.
Of course he did. He came in with a rubber inflatable cushion under a large overcoat. No, I'm not conning you, I promise.
Was he Mr. Mitchell in X, was he?
And then, while they were all the fuss was going on, it was a question of off goes the rubber cushion.
And on goes
I never heard that. Now, if I had heard a I would have thought either his tire has gone down,
or
I should have had that for lunch.
So, panel, I'm going to say, yes, you got that one. Claire, you led them through beautifully. The two boys on either side of you got there just on the dot, so you now have 1¾ marks. Right, final situation coming up. It started the day a young businessman in Leeds received a visit from an Australian gentleman who insisted on speaking to him personally.
Do sit down, Mr. Carr.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Edwards. Good of you to see me.
Now, what is it you want of me?
Nothing. That is, I don't want anything from you. I'm here to give you something.
Oh, I see. You're another salesman, are you? Well, I admire your guile in getting past my secretary, but I do employ people to deal with salesmen. I suggest you see my secretary again on your way out. Fix up an appointment with our Mr. Searle.
You got the wrong end of the stick, Mr. Edwards. I'm no salesman. Don't kick me out before you've heard what I've got to say. I've just come 12,000 miles to give you 2,000 quid for nothing. Ah, no, that's not all much to a man like you, but this is tax-free.
Oh, yes. And what are you after in return?
A receipt, just to prove I gave it to you. It's your own money anyway. Or rather, your late father's. A great man, your father.
You knew my father?
Not personally, no, but my old man did. He was born and bred here in Leeds before he emigrated to Aussie 42 years ago, just before the war started.
Well, that's before I was even born.
Yeah, me too. Oh, excuse me. Got a bit of a cold. Anyway, as I was saying, my dad lived here and was one of the first workers your father, Jack, ever employed. He took my dad on as an apprentice and taught him everything he ever knew about engineering.
Excuse me. Yes, Carol?
Mr. Edwards, Mr. Kershaw's on the line. Will you speak to him now, or shall I tell him you're busy?
Tell him I'm in a meeting, Carol. I'll call him back in 5 minutes.
Right, Mr. Edwards. Oh, and Mr. Jackson's here for his 4 o'clock appointment.
Ask him if he'd mind waiting for a few minutes. I'll see him as soon as I can.
I'll tell him. Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Now, Mr. Carr, as you can see, I'm a very busy man, so if you would come straight to the point.
Oh, sure. Well, the point is that your father took a liking to my old man, and when he immigrated to Melbourne, he loaned him not only the fare, but also several hundred quid to get himself started in business there.
Well, my father was always too generous.
Unfortunately, dear old Dad was conned out of the money as soon as he tried to set up a workshop of his own. So he couldn't pay the loan back within the 5 years, as he'd promised.
Well, I shouldn't imagine my father would have lost much sleep over that.
No, but mine did. He was a man of principle, my dad. Hated letting anyone down, ever. Just before he died, he made me promise to come over and return the £1,500 your dad lent him, plus £500 interest. He even gave me a cheque already signed. Oh, sorry about that. Your climate's killing me. The sooner I pay off the two debts and get back to the sunshine, the better.
Two debts, did you say?
That's right, Mr. Edwards. After Dad lost the money your father had lent him, he borrowed £1,000 from the bank. He needed a guarantor, and an old school friend of his, a bloke called Harry Steadman, underwrote the loan. But things got worse, and Dad couldn't keep up the repayments, so the bank called in the loan. Harry had to cough up £1,000. Dad wanted me to pay Harry back £1,000 he lost, and another £1,000 for his trouble.
And have you done so?
Not yet. I've only just managed to trace him. He's in an old people's home in Surrey. Poor fellow's broken half-blind now. He really can do with that £2,000 he's got coming. I'll see him tomorrow, and then it's the first plane back to Aussie for me. It can't be soon enough.
Well, if you don't mind me saying so, wouldn't it have been less trouble and surely much cheaper to have had a private detective trace Mr. Steadman, and then you could have sent the money over to each of us by post?
Yeah, that would have been the simpler way, I suppose, but I wanted to see it was done properly, and I do have one other little problem, one that I'm sure you can help me out with.
Very good. Well, I don't think I need to tell you that the con man in this case is Mr. Carr from way down under.
Yeah.
He's obviously pulling some sort of con, but what on earth is the con? He's come over here to give back two guys a couple of £1,000.
It's the touch.
It's the chip.
I tell you what.
What?
I think he's bought it in Australian money, and the banks are closed, and he's going to say to Mr. Edwards, now, I've got this here, you know, Mr. Steadman's money. Trouble is, I can't wait to go to the bank to change it from Australian to English. I'll give you, you know, this £2,000 money. You know, I'll give you a cheque
for £3,000.
So will you give it to me in English? You do give me English money for Mr. Steadman, and he's going to fall for it. He's going to get away with the £2,000, and the cheque is going to bounce.
No, not £2,000. Only be £1,000, surely.
Hold on a second. He's got how much money in Australian money?
No, £2,000 of his money, and £1,000 he owes the little fella down the road.
But he's going to give him £2,000. He's going to give them each £2,000.
You think he's got it all in Aussie money?
No,
and I think he's got it all in
nothing. Got it in a cheque.
Yeah.
He's got an edit check. It's right
on an Australian bank.
Australian bank, probably.
Yeah.
And we
upside
know
upside down bank.
We know the banks are
That's
right. We know the banks are about to close because the secretary phoned and said you've got this appointment at 4 o'clock. Therefore,
ah,
I mean,
good thinking.
What about Superintendent Hudd on the end there?
I think he should dial 666 and get 3 Australian quid.
All right.
Now you've got a bank. Australian bank check,
yes.
So what's he going to do with that?
And he's going to get our Mr. Steadman.
Give him a receipt. He's mentioned getting a receipt about something.
Steadman's the old chap, remember, who was a bit...
Our businessman.
Yeah.
He's going to get our businessman to give him the real hard English money in exchange for this cheque, which he can't cash at the bank because the bank's closed because it's nearly 4 o'clock. Yeah. He's going to get hard cash from Mr. Edwards so he can go down to poor old blind, helpless Mr. Steadman, down in wherever it is. He's going to give him also a cheque for £2,000. His £2,000
cheque. So he's got two
cheques. Yeah, two cheques. That's right. One for him. But will he cash Mr. Steadman so that he go off and give Mr. Steadman his money and he finishes off with £2,000 in hard English cash and our poor hero here, Mr. Edwards, have I got it right, finishes off with two useless Australian cheques.
You go along with that, Mr. Jason.
The only thing is that I can't remember how much money poor old little blind, deaf Mr. What's-his-name?
Two grand.
Ah, well, then Mr. Renner has done it completely right, and I think he's going to get the £2,000 in good old English-fashioned money and then disappear wherever he's going to go to disappear to. That's how the con works. Two cheques.
All right, well, you're possibly almost there. I'm not going to say whether you are or not.
Good.
What I'm going to say is we'll continue the scene and see how close you were or whether you were right on target. So let's go back to Mr. Edwards' office in Leeds.
So what is your problem, Mr. Carr?
Here's Dad's cheque for the 4,000. It's drawn on an Australian bank and made out to me personally.
So?
Well, it'll take about a week to clear before I could give half to you and half to Harry. The easiest thing to avoid me having to hang around is for me to endorse this cheque to you and you to give me your cheque for 2,000 quid made out to Harry. Then I can get back home where the climate's more civilized. Have you got it?
Yes. He's going to get the cheque made out to himself, yeah. Of course.
Guess what the con man's name is?
Harry Stedman!
Well, right! He gives a £4,000 dud cheque on an Australian bank. He's given a cheque made out to himself. And off he goes. And off he cashes it back to Australia. And who can find him? Well, well done then, panel. I'm going to give you a full one for that. That gives you 2¾.
It's nearly full marks.
Well, now, those are all the situations we have time for this week. But just hold on for a moment, because I want to give you some brief details of one that we'll be featuring in next week's show. It also concerns a loan, and it's one that a music hall comedian made to the man who helped him get ready before the performance. The dresser, in other words. Now, the dresser wanted the money for someone else, and all the people in this particular situation were sworn to secrecy. If you want to know who was being conned and how, well, tune into Pros and Cons next week and hear the answer. Until then, I just say goodnight on behalf of tonight's panel of Roy Hudd, David Jason and Claire Rayner, our repertory company were John Church, Trevor Cooper and Rowena Roberts, deviser and writer Brad Ashton, producer Ros Bartlett and me, Shaw Taylor. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.